Hot round! Red 7, Red 7, Red 7! Don!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what Red 7 means.
Hot round!
I don't. What is hot round?
Will you just go stand on the other side, please?
Billy Bob! This is it! The man who got us here, you ready?
You don't think that lame-ass play where I run downfield and act like I'm lost is gonna work, do you?
Then he pivots, fakes, chucks the big bomb halfway down the field to our hopefully still wide open tailback. I call it the annexation of Puerto Rico.
Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch. Nom, 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 nom.
I need that ball. Get me the ball.
You need the ball.
Get me the ball.
Get you the ball.
Are you going to get me the ball?
I'll get you the ball.
I want the ball. I want the ball.
I hope he doesn't kill somebody.
Welcome into the 57th episode of 11 Personnel. I'm Nick Roush with Adam Luckett in a training camp edition of the football podcast, where Luckett, last week we were speaking and the SEC football schedule had just been released. We were kind of running around like chickens with our heads cut off. The football team had just started running around with helmets on. They hadn't really done anything yet, but we're up to five practices now. They've put on the shoulder pads. They've popped them around a little bit, and it's starting to feel more like football season.
It is. You've had how many times have you talked to them already? Three? Four? How many media sessions have you been to?
So we got Stoops. We had two with Gran, a White, and another Stoops. So that'd be five.
Yeah. How's it feel to do that in a virtual setting?
Man, I'm bad at it. Because my ADD is so bad on a computer that, like, now when I tune out the coaches because they're answering a question I don't care about, I can just get – I'm not just staring at a wall, you know, or, like, staring through my phone. I get very easily distracted. And I've found myself writing 1,000-word practice reports. And I just – I can't be doing that consistently. I just can't. So – It's weird, but and I can't ask my dumb questions like it. I really hate that I can't do that.
It seems like, you know, be obviously pro and con. Like, you can just go to your little lair instead of having to make the commute, but you also don't. There's something to be said for being there, and there's stuff you can kind of see trickling out of practice.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Or side conversations you can hear.
Yeah.
Where you don't get that now, but.
Well, you don't get the, like today we had Justin Rigg, and I'm, like, Rigg's a guy that, like, he's pretty normal. He's one of those guys that I can, like, chat up afterwards for a few minutes about just nothing. And, you know, that goes a long way. He's like, today Josh Moore was like, I know you like the movies. How you been doing without the movie theaters? And it's like, well, I'd like to know more about his movie watching habit and what movies he's been watching, but it just feels weird over Zoom. So there's some weird parts to it.
We're big movie theater people, me and Taylor, and we've missed it. So really? We're right there with you, Rig.
Oh man.
Yeah, the big Christopher Nolan movie's coming out.
Tenet.
Labor Day weekend.
It's been pushed back many times.
So I guess they're just releasing it via on demand.
No, they said it's only going to be in
only select theaters.
So wherever theaters are open, they're going to have it there.
I may have to look that up, how far away, because that's obviously Christopher Nolan's probably my favorite director. I love all the stuff he does. But anyway, that's movie buff Luckett for you.
who knew that you had so many different hats to wear? Like Tony Vannetti. But no, that kind of small talk you missed. Now, it was kind of nice, like,
mm-hmm.
5 minutes before we were supposed to go in at 6 and it got pushed back. And in that 15-minute span, my son had a huge blowout and I was able to, like, help instead of, you know, leaving my wife up a creek without a paddle. So there's definitely some positives to some negatives to it. And what also is cool is with this access, like, they're giving us more photos in practice, more videos. So, like, tonight's practice post is 2 minutes of just them doing drills that you normally wouldn't get, or you would get it in, like, some highly cut up video, where this is just pretty blase B-roll. So there are definitely some setbacks to it, but I still think that despite the setups, we're getting some really juicy information. Look it.
Yeah. Is Bryce Oliver the new TJ Carter?
Who? That's you know what? I like that question. And I'm going to say yes, because the freshmen have really been the flavor of the month. They're, you know, they're Yeah. They're fun to name drop.
But we knew that was coming in, though. Like, especially we knew with that they class. Were going to get a lot of hype. Right, right. But and like even Oliver, on signing day, they haven't – just the coaching staff has not tempered expectations for that group.
No. In fact, it's been unlike any other – like, I've done this since – 2012. As soon as Stoops got here, I was going all these practices. He always was pumping the brakes. He's not right. pumping the brakes at all this year. So that's what's getting excited about. We can talk about that later, but I like the way you phrased that question though, like it, because TJ Carter was a guy who, if he's improving, then this unit is going to be exponentially better. And so far, Bryce Oliver has been not only good, but consistent through five practices.
And, I mean, the passing game is a big topic right now because, like Grant said today, he wants to get balance back in the offense, a.k.a. I don't want to run it 65 times a game, no matter how fun that is to some people. But – and it's building that. And with that, you know, Josh Ali, it's been pretty clear that he's, you know, the wide receiver one.
Right.
And he's a guy, though, I think they're probably going to move inside. He's going to play a lot in the slot this season. So, really, it's finding guys on the outside. And I think this guy is a candidate to, you know, be kind of a starter and kind of that maybe second or third leading receiver behind Ali. And, I mean, it's been like every media session his name's been brought up. So, sounds like he's making plays. And even you go back to Eddie Grand's first time he met with y'all, he said it wasn't necessarily giving Bryce hype. It was just like, we need Bryce Oliver to be good. We need him to produce. So
it was the same kind of challenge that Brad White gave Quentin Bohanna, where
yes
like, all right, that's good what you did, but we need this consistent. And I really like, just you know, if I had the wherewithal to add the clips, like the actual soundbite that Brad White had. I've got the video on YouTube. Hell, I might just pull up the soundbite and insert it right here.
Quentin and I have had quite a few talks because I have very lofty expectations for what he can be for us. And I will not shy away from that. And he doesn't want me to shy away from the fact that we need more out of him. And I expect more. It's not about being, you know, a one player or a two play a game, you know, that looks good in a highlight film. It has to be consistent down in and down out. And, you know, again, he wasn't just a highlight guy. He, you know, he does a lot of the dirty work that nobody sees. He commands a lot of double teams. He keeps guys free. But what I expect of him is to do that and then more. So it's his job plus is what we talk about. And what he can do is he can hold point, and when a guy comes off, I expect him to tear off. I really expect to get more out of him in the pass rush game this year. You know, he doesn't need to just be thought of as a run guy. He's got enough twitch and short area burst and strength that he can affect the pass game, and we need him to. Because there's going to be times that he gets the one-on-one. And when he gets the one-on-one, there should be nobody that can block him. And so that's the expectation for him. That's what I expect him to do. You know, Marquand, same way. Like, there's nobody that should be able to one-on-one block Marquand. If they do, I expect those guys to make a play.
The thing about the way that White put it is that when you read it, it can sound like it's kind of harsh for Quentin Bohanna. You know, like, we don't need you just making a few highlights a game. We need to be consistent. But that's not to say he's not doing more. But really, here's the deal. I'm lighting a fire up his ass. I'm putting a foot right there, kicking him in the keister, and trying to get this guy going, because the significance of how his ceiling is really the defensive line ceiling to an extent.
Yes. That
can be said the same about the pass catchers, where if Bryce Oliver looks like the guy who's out there mossing on dudes on a regular basis, who's playing fast, it makes the offense look completely different. It really stretches things out and opens up Eddie Grant's playbook.
I think they just want more havoc from that position. It's just been too much of a position of just hold your ground, don't get beat, and let the guys behind you or the guys on the edge make plays. for the defense to reach their full potential, I think they need guys in the three down. They need them to make plays too. I think that's part of the reason they're moving Pascal down inside, because they think he's a guy that can provide it. And I think they think Bohanna, going into the senior year, has played a lot of football. He's seen it in small doses. Like, you turn on the Louisville tape, you see him making some plays. I think that's really what they want. They want the tackles for loss. They want the run stuff. They want inside pressures from, you know, the nose on passing situations, stuff like that. I think that's really what White was getting at, was we need more havoc. We need more negative plays from that group.
Well, and to that point, he also called out Bully when he said, you know, somebody's going to get the one-on-ones, and whoever gets them has to go make a play. And Bully McCall, that's another dude that got some shout-outs today. There's right. kind of a few, I mean, of them.
We've seen him in small sample size, but, Nick, it's hard for an interior defensive lineman to stick out to, you know, if you're just watching ball watching, mm-hmm. it's hard for them to stick out. But right. him, he you notice him.
yeah, no.
You because do. Of the brute force and power and quickness he all has.
The punch. Yes.
Especially when he gets singled up. I mean, anytime he gets singled up, it should be, you know, a blown-up play is, I think, what Brad White was getting at there. But he's a guy, you know, he was a really, really high-rated recruit Kentucky got. That was a huge recruiting win. Mm-hmm. And now he's a junior now. He's draft eligible. So now it's time, you know, now it's time where they can play you 20 plays a game and get 20 plays of max effort. I think before it was just, if you can get 10 out of him, you'll take it. But now yeah. they want him to take the next step.
Yeah, and Darren Kennard, a guy who's pretty soft-spoken, matter of fact, despite his badassery on the football field, that he was a guy that, like, he called out your boy KD McDaniel and said him and J.J. Weaver have really looked good. But when Kennard's also getting some reps at guard, Sharman, he really mixes everything up in early training camp days, or kind of tosses it all up against the wall and see what's
right. Safe. Right.
He's been working at those guard positions as well, and said that Bully is just that. In fact, he is a bully. And to be honest, like, when I saw the roster and he was at 379, I got kind of worried. Bully's a guy you worry about during.
I don't worry about quarantine. Him right now. You worry. Well. Yes, but during the season, you don't worry about him right now. Like, he's going to lose probably 10 pounds a week.
That's true.
Out there in August. What you worry about him is when you get into October, November, when the practice starts getting a little lighter, you're not sweating as much. Does your diet go bad, or do you stay strict on it?
The pictures from week one where he's got his shirt rolled up and his belly's hanging out to, like, week four at camp will look much different. There's
right.
there's no
but he's difference. Always going to be a guy. He's just
– He's a big guy.
Like,
he's big
that's, boy. Well, that's his body shape, so to speak. But he's always going to have to play at a big weight. So, for him, it's all about building up that motor. How do you build it up where you can keep going, where you can play a lot of snaps? And for him, he's got to figure out what weight that is and get there and kind of stay there. And I think that's something he's trying to figure out. Like you said, that 370, what was it, 379?
Yeah, yeah. He was the heaviest on the team.
Now those rosters aren't always the most accurate
mm-hmm.
when it comes to height and weight, but that's a guy, not so much this year, but next year you think, you know, you're going to need a little bit more out of him. And some, you know, I think what Quentin Bohanna has proven, that he can play a lot of snaps. I think that's why he's one of the reasons he's so valuable and why a lot of NFL teams are kind of looking at him. Because of that stamina and durability he has at that size. So Bully's got to prove that. But for right now, if you can get 15, 20 good snaps out of him a game, I think you'll take it.
While we're on the D-line, Josh Ali, of all people, he said he had like two statements that really kind of got me like, wait. He said that? And it was when he was asked, like, yeah, which I love these questions of the players, because they'll give you more than the coaches. But, like, who's kind of giving you problems? First, he said, you know, this secondary is the most difficult I've had to go up against. And he also went against Mike Edwards, Derek Beatty, Lonnie Johnson, that group. So maybe it's a little recency bias in that regard. either way, some high praise. He also couldn't remember Kelvin Joseph's names. I love it. It was just fast.
I did watch that before we came on. It almost looks like he remembered who Kelvin Joseph was, but somebody else is called Fats.
No. He's Fats.
Okay. I know that, but that's not – that's unless there's another Fats going on.
The Kelvin Joseph, they threw – the PR folks are in the room. They just reminded him of his name.
It looked like he got – like he just thought of Kelvin Joseph again and someone else was Fats. That's how it kind of came off.
That would be –
thought we might have to do some investigative journalism.
No, that's what they've been calling him since he got there. Just Fats. Just not even Boss Man Fat. Just Fats, which even more Louisiana. Shout out Fats Domino. But what really got me is that before he ended, he was like, yeah, you know, secondary is really good, but man, that front four, they're giving our offensive lines fits. And I'm thinking to myself, wait, hold on. The big blue wall, this talented group that's just loaded with all SEC prospects, NFL draft guys, maybe the best offensive tackle duo in the SEC, they're having problems with the defensive line? That's all you had to tell me, Luckett. Iron has successfully sharpened iron. We're moving ahead. Kentucky, one of the best in the trenches in the Southeastern Conference. Tell me I'm wrong, Luckett.
One thing I do want to say, though, is Kentucky pass blocking-wise, they haven't done that in a while. So, and if you go back to their 2018 numbers,
they weren't great.
Their sack rate was up there. Now, a lot of that had to do with Terry Wilson, an inexperienced quarterback, but just straight up pass pro, they weren't the best. So that could be, you know, they're probably knocking off some rust. But yeah, you're right. I still think that's a good sign that we'll get back to the defensive line's point. But I think we also need to recognize that. Like, well, how we talk about UK offensive line is mainly due for what they do in the run game.
Right.
They have to make some growth in the pass run.
And that's kind of like what Eddie said, referring back to the offense on Saturday. The offense did well on Saturday because that was the first time the defense had had everything thrown up at them. So, like, they're a little rusty getting in their alignments and whatnot. Just the same way with, like you mentioned, the pass blocking. This is definitely the first week or two-ish. Are a lot of kind of knocking rust off. Now, luckily, they had those as great.
OTAs helped.
Yeah. That really helped them get ahead. But they're knocking some rust off. But I still, the amount of shout-outs just at the defensive line in general, Brad White giving them the looks good in shorts stamp of approval.
Mm-hmm.
Those freshmen, their ultimate looks good in shorts crew.
Right. That's the – That's the old sign of y'all look good now, but let's see when you get punched in the mouth.
And it was
first Oklahoma drill or whatever they do now.
I think that he said that even before they had shoulder pads on too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like the word today was their legs were heavy. Their walls are being hit by some of those young guys. But here's the point I wanted to bring up, like it. The young guys that have been making an impact, the guys who are consistently getting their names thrown out there, it's the same group. Of this group of young guys who's getting the earliest shout outs, who do you think is the most significant?
For this year, it's Vito Tisdale. For the future, Bo Allen.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Didn't go with any pass catchers on any of these.
Those are just to me what I mean. What I'm hearing is like Vito Tisdale's going to play,
which is wild.
He might have the inside track of potentially starting over guys like or ahead of a guy. That just this is what we're taking. Like all those guys that redshirted last year, like MJ Devonshire and all those dudes. It just sounds like he's
Moses Douglas.
Kind of a guy, yeah, that can compete for a guy that could potentially get snaps in nickel and dime packages.
And the word they use too is the physicality, and also the guy's just got some swagger to him. Like
he's a safety who can play all the field. He could probably drop in coverage. He could probably cover the slot. Could probably be a guy that you can send on different type of blitzes and stuff like that. So he's got some versatility there in his game where he can do a lot of things. Whereas some other guys that maybe just strictly corners like Joe Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Are not as versatile as that. So it's easier for a guy like Tisdale who can move around to get on the field quicker.
Well, and the thing about Tisdale too is, like, he was one of those who'd been ranked so high for so long.
Weird kind of recruitment, because he blew up
real early.
He blew up, had all kinds of offers. Looked like maybe an LSU lean at one point.
Oklahoma too.
Like, Oklahoma was in there, and then I guess summer going into the senior year, something happened, and it just kind of got real quiet in his recruitment. And then, like, his senior year, he put out, like, no senior tape on Huddle.
I'm wondering if really, like, he just committed to Kentucky early and was just –
yeah, just shut it down.
Quiet so nobody tries to
– yeah, it could have – yeah, it could have been one of those. But he doesn't commit. He doesn't commit to the Army All-American game.
Right.
And then he commits to Kentucky. And he sees his ranking drop. He sees his ranking drop, I think, in part because of that, because
– he didn't play the game.
It was eerily quiet. Like, it seemed like something maybe – kind of weird was going on there. Who knows what it is, but it seemed like, you know, the original ranking of him, where he was like, I think a legit top 200 prospect by mostly everybody, was more accurate. Instead, he ended up being like a high 3-star. But hearing his name early was not really something I expected. And to hear it multiple times, and that he's making plays in practice, I think is a really, really good sign, not just for this year, but I think really next year, after you lose a couple guys in the secondary.
And that's where I thought, like, okay, when I heard, okay, Vito Tisdale is a guy, same thing with Carrington Valentine. Those were mostly just Valentine's athleticism. It's like, okay, well, that's good for, you know, a year or two from now. But then going into the second practice of the preseason, Vito tells Cedric Dort before practice, I'm going to get 2 picks a day. And it had a very Benny Snell, like, kind of feel to it, where you're like, okay, freshman, you're full of it. You know, like, where are you getting off of this? And then he goes out and gets 2 picks in practice. Like,
that's, you remember the Drake Jackson story about Benny? Yeah. Like, a dinner before the season started, so they told him all he was going to – eat wings or something. Wings.
Yeah.
He said, I'm going to run for 1,000 yards, be all SEC or something.
Yeah, and they were just like, okay. Dude, this guy's crazy. Like, who the hell are you? Which, by the way, have you seen Benny? He's dropped some LBs.
Good.
He's down to 212, so.
Yeah, good.
I noticed, too, on ESPN, they have him as second on the depth chart for the Steelers behind Connor, which is good. Because he won't have had a Samuels. I worry about that, getting, like, the third down reps as, like, a pass catcher. But, anyway, enough Benny Snell. Back to Vito Tisdale and some of the other freshmen. The one that I thought you were going to go flipped over. I thought you were going to say Mike Drennan would be the one for this year just because of – what he can do when you get him in the slot.
I think that was kind of expected, though. I think that's why I probably leaned the lay away from it, because we knew that his skill set is something that the roster just desperately needs, is that kind of playmaking ability.
And unlike Lynn Bowden, like, Lynn got there a week late, never played receiver.
Right. Yeah. I mean, Drennan got there late, too, but not as late as Lynn.
Right. He hasn't missed any practices. He just got here in June instead of, you know, with half the other freshman class.
Right. But I think he's a guy, like, obviously they're going to have to manufacture touches for him and all that. It's good to see him make play. It's good to see him live up to that billing early.
Yes. And also, like, the pictures he posted of him basically Air Jordaning a football with one hand. I'm sure it was just kind of like a toss-up drill.
Yeah.
Still looks very cool, especially when he's next to a skateboard. And when I posted that, I was surprised, like, it only got one person being like, what is he doing on a skateboard? You gotta get off the skateboard. I broke my ankle in 3 different places, and he's got so much on the line, he can't be on a skateboard.
I'm pretty sure he's probably more athletic than the guy who you're talking to there on the Twitterverse.
Yeah.
Listen, man, is it the smartest thing to do? Maybe not, but you don't do the smartest things in college.
Oh, yeah. Much better to be a dumbass on a skateboard than being a dumbass at a party, especially.
Yeah. Like me and you were.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, exactly. I had some people screaming outside my house. And
a little South End throwdown?
Man, now that I've got this baby, like, I just, every time I hear something, the hair stands up on the back of my neck. I'm like, what the hell's going on here? Nothing worse than having that baby waking
up. Those dad instincts sneaking up on you.
My spidey senses tingling. the other name that you mentioned that I wanted to bring up, that I think this was a victim of me tuning out during part of when Stoops was talking on Saturday, because I got distracted by something else he said. But Stoops gave Bo Allen a shout out, and I guess I just glossed over it. But then when asking Eddie Grand today, Eddie gave a glowing review.
Call him a football junkie.
Yeah, a football junkie, and who's just he said he's loved everything he's done. He's really making all the right throws, and the folks around the practice are echoing that sentiment. This isn't Grand just gassing up a guy who's not going to play for a couple of years. And man, does that feel good to hear? Like it just a quarterback being accurate too. Like that was
the bill on him coming out of high school.
And I go back to what Austin McGinnis said in our football podcast, and this had to do with kicking, but you know what? It applies to everything. It's hard to teach accuracy. You can get stronger. You can do some things. You can quicken that release up. You can work on you can improve your footwork, but accuracy, sometimes you just either got it or you don't.
Right.
And Bo Allen's got it, and it's great to hear that that's translated so far. And it made me wonder, could this be another Xavier Peters situation where we all just get all worked up over the transfer waiver for Joey Gatewood and he just never plays it down?
Yeah, I mean.
I mean, it'd be again, hilarious. I don't think it's going to happen, but it'd be fun.
I think it just gets you in a good spot. That you got a guy that they feel confident in, and I think you should be confident in. And they said today he's making alerts. So really what that means is he sees a defensive formation that offense needs to be in a better set or better kind of type of play, and he's checking to that already. Like three practices of spring ball and some OTAs and a couple practices, he's already doing that. So he's already kind of mastering the playbook. And we've talked about with this wide receiver recruiting and how this influx of talent is coming in at receiver, and that's how you fix the passing game. So when Bo Allen gets there, he's going to have the best crop of receivers program has had since Keenan Burton, Steven Johnson were playing back in 07.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to have success, or he's going to have weapons built around him for success, and that you're seeing him in these early stages really kind of overachieving or ahead of schedule, I think is a really good thing for the future of the offense.
And to kind of go to your point too, when you talked about the just how well he's already picked up the offense, I think some of that probably has to do with the fact that he's just been around the program for so long. But I think it also helps that you have I forget his name all the time. I've got the roster pulled up right here. His high school coach, Mark Perry.
Mm-hmm.
He's a quality controller, so he has limitations on the practice field, but the ability to just communicate with a guy like that there's a level of comfortability there. And just the way that Bo's been around the program, I mean, he's lived around the street for, you know, God knows how long. He's been at practice. He's seen how these operate. There's a comfortability level there. And also with the guys that he's been, you know, targeting, throwing the ball to. And one of those guys that has been mentioned a lot was Isaiah Cummings. And I get the sense that even though he might not be the we're going to play him all the time, I get the sense that he's going to be using spots.
He was one of my sneaky candidates of a kid that's going to play early just because of that big physical receiver they don't really have outside of Alan Daly right now. And then if you watch that kid in high school, he was a selfless football player. They would mm-hmm. move him into tight end. He would block, and he would co-cock linebackers in the run game. So he's got some tools there from a blocking and physicality standpoint that really fits into kind of the program's MO in their culture, their identity of that physical nastiness. And I think that's something that the coach is going to really love about him. And then you can throw a guy like Cummings on special teams. Like, he can be on punt team. He can be on punt return. He can be on kickoff. He can be on kickoff return. He can play every special team. And they could help him get on the field early. And then you start looking at the freshman rules. Like, a kid like him, why not just play him all 10 games now? He's going to get a redshirt year anyway.
Right.
So you don't even have to worry about that.
Mm-hmm. And, oh, man, you were talking about a great time to have that rule. Have it with this class. They all just get a free pass on a year. The thing about Cummings, too, that you didn't see a lot of it on tape, and it wasn't his fault. Male just didn't have a very good quarterback last year. He just didn't. For the lack of a better term, he didn't get a lot of targets, but it wasn't his fault.
He's got some, like, he's going to have to prove that he can beat, you know, man coverage. Can he get separation from receivers? Can he be more than a jump ball kind of guy? Because that's what he is right now. He's a jump ball receiver. Can he develop more in his route running? Can he prove that he can be a guy that can get open? But for right now, his ceiling is jump ball and knock the crap out of the defender across from him, and then contribute on special teams. And that's a guy who can play right away. Yeah, that's why I think he will.
Play in some spots. And to those kind of attributes that you said that he's obviously going to have to work on, he's not going to be a day one guy when it comes to having great, you know, perfect releases, especially against man coverage and whatnot. But that was something that Josh Ali talked about with Coach Bo Knight, Coach Bo, he's simply known as to most, where – you've seen this with Mark. Like, this is what, the fifth wide receivers coach he's had, and it's really been a rotating door. And I think for Stoops, it's the one spot he hasn't had he hasn't had success finding one. He's been great at pretty much every position. You know, almost all those guys who've gone somewhere else have had success and continue rising to the coaching ranks, except at wide receiver spot. And I think that, kind of like Eddie Grant, he's been looking for that guy to kind of be the hard ass in the room, but that also can still have that wide receiver swagger about him. You know, it's tough finding that line of being the cool trash talking wide receiver coach who kind of gets the swag behind the position, but also can be a stern person who's going to hold the players accountable. And just from the early comments that we've got today, that's really – accountability was the word that Grant used. And I think his – not only past the way he had success as a player, like, he wasn't this big recruit. He went to freaking Wyoming, for God's sake. He was a running back. You know, he had to learn by being a tactician. And I think that the players understand that, like, this dude knows what he's talking about. And – so and that's really what the players need right now, is somebody to go through the little things after they've had a year of just kind of being, you know, a sideshow of sorts for this offense.
And just a little bit of research I've done on him, I watched some of his interviews and, like, coaching clips when he was at Oregon and Utah State. But back to his playing days at Wyoming, he walked the walk. He developed into a guy who, like, led the country in receiving, or led him in receptions or something, ranked really high, was like an All-American at Wyoming.
Yeah.
And then he starts his coaching career, and he comes off as very, very, like, very serious and very as, like, a tactician. That's how he comes off as a coach. So you're getting a guy who's played at a high level, who can tell the players, you know, I've done it, who could show probably cut-ups of himself doing it a certain way, and can post his numbers on the board there in the receiving room. But also, I think he's got kind of created coaching chops to where he can be a guy that they really kind of respect both ways. Guy he played can relate to, but as a coach, he knows what the hell he's talking about. And that's the right mix they're looking for.
Yeah, and just the – that's really the only, I guess you got Frank Bufano. So there's a little bit of change on the coaching staff, but for the most part, it stayed the same. And
yeah. And Bufano's had a position too where,
I mean, like, he was
Stoops is coaching. Stoops is coaching that position.
Yeah.
For a lot of practice. You know what I'm saying?
That's why I feel bad for Brad White, because Feldman did, like, this list of, like, top.
Yeah, that was Raiders. That was some crap, man.
The fact that they
go over Brad that list White if out. You want to. Yeah, that was some crap.
I mean, they included the Louisville DC.
That's because Feldman, he's cool with the staff. I mean, I like Bruce, but like, let's.
You like who you like.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there is a little, you scratch my back. That list was some. I didn't love that list.
And Derek Ainsley on there.
Yeah, that list was some crap. If you're gonna have the Missouri defensive coordinator on there, he needs to have Brad White needs to be on there.
Ooh, speaking of lists that were a bunch of crap, like it. What are your thoughts on the AP Top 25?
Man, like I understand why that. Like from a historical standpoint, they wanted to like honor these teams to say they could at least be in the AP Top 25. And yeah, so like teams like Ohio State can continue their streaks, whatever streaks they have going. Okay. But do you remember Northwestern was in the top 25 last year?
Yeah, because I thought Hunter Johnson was going to be the truth.
Yeah. You know why they did that? It's because they got a Clemson transfer quarterback, and they were like, oh, you know, Pat Fitzgerald wins a lot. So let's put them in there. So there was a lot of that towards the back of the top 25, like Iowa. Iowa lost a lot off last year's team. They're just kind of throwing them a bone, the Ferentz.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go down and you look at the
Herm
receiving
Edwards.
Votes. Used receiving votes. Like we've gone all over ad nauseum about this Louisville stuff in this Satterfield love fest. But like Herm Edwards in Arizona State being there. Makes absolutely no sense. That makes like zero sense to me. They got a new offensive coordinator from Boise State, Zach Hill. New defensive coordinator, Marvin Lewis. They just brought off the analyst team.
Marvin's with Herm? That's perfect. That's a match made in heaven.
Marv was his like chief of staff, or like how he termed it was last year, he coached the coaches. So, Nick, listen to this. So when it'd be in game management situations, they would go to the sideline and they would show Herm and Marvin would be over there telling him stuff. Like in the 2 minute, in the end of half, in you know, fourth and short at 50 yard line.
Can you think of a worse person for that position?
I love Marvin Lewis. I love him. He did really good stuff for the Bengals. I'll take out the playoffs aside. But yeah, he's not like he's not the top of the
situational coach. Management. Like, come on. Yeah.
So he's our defensive coordinator. The defensive coordinator left. I think he's at Syracuse now. And the defensive coordinator is a New Mexico head coach. That's Danny Gonzalez. So they're going from they had a 3-3-5 and now they're switching like to a 4-3 for under Marvin. Well, anyway, they made that list because one Herm's a big name and that Jaden Daniels is a real deal. He's a first round talented quarterback.
Oh, okay.
But if you look at their efficiency numbers and what they returned,
they weren't going to be good.
I mean, they're going to be like a 7-5. They would have been a 7-5-8-4 team, maybe competing for a top 25 spot. Like Jake Daniels, I really like, but they had a lot of unknowns, and so to do that over Kentucky, as well as some other teams, when you look at what Kentucky has, it's just I hate to say this, and I think it's something we throw out too much. But that the lack of respect or just the lack of not knowledge, not doing the research. I think you've seen some of these people that do the research and look at analytics and take a deeper dive into this stuff have had Kentucky in the top 25 or pretty close to it. And then you see some of these more old school way of thought have not. And I think that's pretty telling.
Well, and you know what, though? I'm fine with it. Like, I love writing posts that's just like
yeah, but it is a big deal. Kentucky hasn't been ranked in the preseason top 25 since 78. They've got a team that should be in it, and they're not in it. I mean, it's kind of a big deal. Like, what are we doing? Mark Stoops been here 7 years, bro. Like, y'all need to wake up. Like, start, you know, paying attention to what's going on here.
I do like that you mentioned, too, the guys who really – kind of dig into the analytics and stuff, which was kind of striking when you juxtapose what Cole Kublik had to say about that Auburn matchup. And then the CBS Sports guys on the Cover 3 podcast, I don't listen regularly, but you know, I'll chime in from time to time, and they did their SEC's win totals, which we're going to dive into win totals next week. That's going to be a fun episode, but none of the four guys even like mentioned Auburn as a toss-up game, whereas like Kublik, an Auburn graduate, is picking Kentucky to beat Auburn.
Yeah, other than Barton Simmons said, I think he thought Kentucky was going to win.
But yeah, aside from that, like all the rest of them were that going ahead and writing down the 5-5 because they'd have to be perfect against their beatable teams, and then quote unquote upset Tennessee to get over that 5.5, which, you know what, you can debate all you want, but just the fact that none of them had even considered really ever considered that.
A thing about that is too,
Nick, Auburn is pretty wild.
I mean, Kentucky's going to get somebody. Like, they're going to upset someone. Last year, it was Missouri as a double-digit dog. Year before that, Florida as a double-digit dog, and Mississippi State as a double-digit dog. Year before that, they won at South Carolina. Year before that, four touchdown dog on the road against Louisville. And most of those, like half of those, or more than half of those wins that came at home or away, excuse me. So they've proven they can, they're not just a home team that can strike them and get somebody, they can go somewhere and beat somebody too. So, like, for me, when I look at Kentucky's schedule, like, they're going to get somebody, but I also think they're going to trip up against someone too. It's just making sure, I think, that you don't trip up more than once and can you pull more than one upset. If you can do that, then it's going to be an historic season.
Yeah. And we talked about the schedule at length, so I don't want to get into it. But what I do want to get into that we brought up Auburn, you brought something to my attention that Auburn did over the weekend that I don't really Gus Malzahn? Like, really?
Yeah, Auburn had a scrimmage this past Saturday. Malzahn said they ran, like, I believe it was like 90 something plays. So, and I'm assuming it was full pads. I don't know how you would have a scrimmage without full pads. But yeah, that's very quick to get into full pads. I think the rule is they have to have two practices without it, and then after that they can go in. I pulled up here, 92 play scrimmage. And not only that, they went live field goal block, and 6 reps of live punt return.
That's nobody does that, like, ever with
live. I was pretty shocked by that when I was tuned in for his press conference, because what we want to do here, as training camp's going on, I kind of want to just give y'all kind of update of what's going on some other places.
Ooh, is this a segment alert? Are we getting Luckett's training camp corner?
This is, I don't know what we're going to call it.
Luckett's SEC training camp corner?
Yeah, I'll go around the SEC with Luckett. Ooh, yeah. Ooh.
This will be Luckett's bus, because it's kind of like how Madden had the bus. So
yeah, there Luckett's you go.
SEC training camp bus.
Yeah.
Hop on the bus. All right, Luckett.
LTCB, Luckett's training camp bus. So obviously Auburn is scrimmaging right now, which is kind of surprising. And a quick note on Auburn, Bo Nix last year was like a Jekyll and Hyde. He was good at home, bad on the road. Like, I'm going to pull these stats out later, but just get ready for that. Like, get ready to hear those stats hit over our head as this game approaches, how good he was at Jordan-Hare and how bad he was away from.
It's kind of like as we go into Derby, the amount of times we're going to be reminded that,
right,
oh, this is the first time. It's not the first leg of the Triple Crown, and this is the first time it's not in the – like, we're just going to hear it on and on and on and on.
Mm-hmm. And the biggest news, Nick, from this past week, for me at least, was Kirby Smart at his kind of – you know, the press conference before practice starts, where he's just kind of taking questions, meeting with the media for the first time. And Kirby, I thought, had an interesting quote. Now, of course, they're bringing in this new offensive coordinator, and they're supposed to – supposed to, like, open up the offense, mm-hmm, and all Todd this Monken, stuff, modernize the offense.
Southern Miss.
And Kirby gets on there and says, I have never in my head coaching career got on the headset, got on offensive coordinator's headphones and said, let's run the ball right here. Are you buying or selling that, Nick Roush?
Oh man! You know what? I bet Mark Stoops would love to say that if we didn't have the SEC Network just filming him over and over saying, "Give the ball to Benny, give the ball to Benny," in that game against Vanderbilt.
Yeah,
ain't that the biggest crock? Just, you know,
I think that's the ultimate ultimate truth or lie litmus test for a coach. Have you ever got on the offensive coordinator's headset and told him to run a specific play? If he says yes, he's telling the truth. If he says no, he's lying right to your face. Well, and Kirby said that. And I was just like, I don't know about that there, Kirby.
I mean, especially with all these defensive coaches. Like,
yeah,
they want to keep the ball on the ground to kind of take the pressure off their defense. Kirby, you ain't fooling nobody.
Yeah.
I mean, you just aren't. You aren't.
Also at Georgia, they've had some QB health issues. JT Daniels is not cleared yet
for
ACL. and Jamie Newman, who had injuries last year, missed time last year with injuries. He had some type of calf strain that they had to keep him out for 3 weeks leading up to practice. So that's just something to keep an eye on with them. Can they stay healthy at that quarterback position?
Right, because on paper, those guys, they went from nothing to a whole lot of something right away. At least with I'm assuming that Daniels transferred kind of under the assumption that
he wouldn't have to play right away.
Which makes more sense now when you look at that move, why he would go there with Jamie Newman already on the roster. But, yeah, especially because Newman is a guy who, I mean, he's not a run-first guy, but he moves around a lot. So health is a
– Yeah. I mean, you could use him in the read option game where he can keep it a couple times a game.
And at Wake Forest, I felt like he was running for his life all the time and just slinging it.
Yeah.
But the one injury news that I
– We're getting to that one too.
Oh, okay. Let's get to it. Let's go up to Columbia, shall we?
We'll go over to Columbia. Okay, South Carolina got this running back by the name of Marshawn Lloyd, I think is his name. He's out of DeMatha in the DMV. You know, DeMatha is more known for kind of their basketball prowess, but this kid played at DeMatha Catholic out of the DMV. And he is South Carolina's highest-rated running back since Marshawn Lattimore. And so if you go and look at their running backs under Muschamp, it hasn't been all that great. They've been really looking for a dude at running back. This guy was supposed to be it. 5'10", 5'9", 215, 220 pounds. He's just built to be a workhorse. And, like, he was a guy that was probably going to be one of the leading candidates to be probably rookie or offensive rookie of the year in the league. He was going to get a bunch of carries. Bobo's kind of initiating kind of a pro-style offense, so there was going to be more of a physical-type running game.
He was going to be dedicating to the run game, remember?
Yeah. Right, getting under center. This kid was a big part of all that, I think. And he tore his ACL in a non-contact drill. They just had helmets on, just practicing. And so he's out for the year, and that's a big, big loss for them. Because I think he's the best player on their offense right now. So without him, their group of running backs you look at, it's probably the worst running back group in the SEC right now, not outside of Nashville. When you just look at them overall. And I just think in a new offense – They got tons of quarterback issues. Out at wide receiver, they lost Brian Edwards, who's their all-time leading receiver, a year after losing Debo, who was Mr. Everything for them. So at receiver, they're a lot of, you know, you don't know. And an offensive line has been a struggle for them for a while. You know, Bobo's a guy who's got a pretty good proven track record as a play caller, but you look at what he has to work with over there, and it just doesn't look good for them right now.
Yeah. The way that we've kind of made the Egg Bowl a reoccurring theme on the show, the Will Muschamp hot seat, I think that's going to be a reoccurring theme throughout the season because just the tenor at which fans kind of react to how – because, like –
the opener against Tennessee is so important.
I mean,
it is so important for them. If they don't win that game, I mean, the season's going to go on the crapper pretty fast.
Because then they'll be – I think – I don't have the schedule in front of me, but Vanderbilt is really their only – winnable game until the bye after that because they got like Florida, Alabama, LSU. I mean, they've got a pretty front heavy schedule. So, like you said, if they don't beat Tennessee right away, they're in trouble. And the thing is with Muschamp is even from last year, it's he got the, you know what, we believe in you long term. This schedule sucked. Like that schedule they had last year was a kick in the ass and they beat Georgia. So that gave them enough hope. Yeah. But then if you like what the kind of standards by how the record is will dictate, like, I don't even know what the record is that would either keep Muschamp or get him fired. I have no idea what that could be right now because hell, even if you win four games, like that's probably a good year for South Carolina. And so like, I guess you keep him around, but how bad does it have to get, you know, for them to
four
be
of their
like,
first,
all right,
first
we're pulling the trigger.
Right. Five of their first six are against preseason top 25 teams, and that's not even counting Georgia. So you look at that, right, just that right there in general. And one of those – the one that's not is Vanderbilt, which is a must-win for them. So getting out of the gate, I think beating Tennessee is really, really important for him early.
What's can we go down to Gainesville?
Yep, that's also on the list. Take the
bus down there.
Go down to Dan Mullen land, and basically, they start practice, and four pivotal players aren't there. They ask Mullen about it. He gives an answer like, "Well, I don't really know. You have to ask them about it." Yeah, that's a little weird.
We need some more Dan Mullen impressions.
So then it goes on, and then finally, slowly, they each of them like kind of releases some cryptic stuff on Twitter. Like Trayvon Grimes says something about an Ole Miss player tweets something, I think, and he quotes tweets it and just like has a wink, like talking about game one, but doesn't say like he's playing or not. Mm-hmm. And then Zachary Carter tweeted, he was defense end, had another thing with like a note tweet he had that was not for sure he was playing or not. While Kadarius Toney and Jacob Copeland didn't say anything. Mm-hmm. And then finally, I think yesterday, they were all at practice and they confirmed that they were playing. But it was weird. It was weird that it went a week, and it's nothing really happened. Which also, Florida, we think we have it bad here when it comes to rosters. Florida still doesn't have a roster out for the season.
But you know what? If they didn't have those guys on the roster, then their tight end, Kyle Pitts, is like the only guy back.
So you thought it looked like they could be in real trouble, but now they're all playing. But that's probably a situation we still need to monitor.
Yeah, I mean, I would certainly.
Seems like a bullet dodge for right now.
And it's something that Drew brought up on the football podcast. You know, what if the wheels start spinning for a team, and then all of a sudden their top players are just like, you know what? I don't need to play this season anymore. Florida loses some early games. They lose the cocktail party again.
Those guys might just tank like Houston did last year and just be like, we're redshirting anyway. Let's just pack it in, get hurt, get some other guys some experience, and run it back next season. Especially if a prominent player gets hurt, like a quarterback or something.
Right. I was just going to say, for guys like Tony, and I don't know what Grimes' year is, but like Tony's a solid day two draft pick. So like,
This is Grimes' last year. He'll be a draft pick.
Yeah. So like those guys, you could see them wanting to preserve their stock and just being like, maybe I don't need to stick around and play UK in the second to last game of the year. Just something to keep an eye on.
And then last stop, Ole Miss had, it wasn't really a scrimmage, but I think they kind of got out 7-on-7 type thing. And they asked Kiffin about it, and he admitted that John Rhys Plumlee had a couple turnovers and that Matt Corral is the leader of the two right now.
Oh, man. Kiffin is doing this already. Doesn't he know you're supposed to not say anything for like 3 weeks?
So they asked him about it, and he kind of didn't give an answer, and they ended up giving an answer kind of thing.
Hmm.
So Matt Corral, early lead, and that's a guy I've said I think was going to start for them all along just because I think he fits more what Kiffin offense needs, which is a guy who can complete vertical passage, which Plumlee is run first. While Corral, we saw what he did in the Egg Bowl.
Right. Rock. Now that we brought up quarterback competition, I'm going to take the wheel and drive this bus to Como, and because I need to shove Eli Drinkwitz in a locker. All right, I've got the itch, and I just need to dunk him in because they have a quarterback competition. God knows who it's between, if we're going to be quite honest with you. But when asked who's in the lead, he flat out said he didn't even do the Mark Stoops, let's play a poker face, and say, they did some good things and they did some bad things. He did the, we're not going to say who our starter is. We're going to make Alabama plan for them all.
What do you think Saban did when he saw that?
I mean, Saban probably spit up his oatmeal cream pie. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, it was like, because we don't have enough guys to watch film on all your quarterbacks, you moron. Like,
I like what he said about he brought up all these different coaches with these different offensive backgrounds. Like, yeah, like that's – you're running your offense, dude. Like, we know you ain't – like, we know it's not just going to be this glob of seven offense if you put together like Play-Doh.
No, you're running what you did at App State last year, you more – like, I want to, like, at least give him some credit for doing things differently. And, like – I've almost reached the point that like Missouri, they're just weird. So like, okay, cool. You've got a nerd as your coach who's just, he does this weird little nerd stuff and catches attention. It's a fun little gimmick, but my goodness, it's still just like, just God, you stupid nerd. Like, eh. I can't help it. Like it. I am what I am. I'm a big meathead at the end of the day. Big meathead.
It's going to be fun watching the Drinkwitz experience this year, I think. He's in for a little bit of a baptism by fire.
Yeah, I think so. Even if he would have had Kelly Bryant, like he might have had a little bit more to work with, but man.
Yeah, one of the quarterbacks in that competition, do you remember the name Connor Bazelak?
Yeah, he Kentucky recruit. He's from Ohio, I believe.
Yeah, he's a redshirt freshman.
He's at Missouri. Committed elsewhere, right?
Yeah, he's at Missouri. Yes, I can't remember where. That sounds right.
It was like a Texas Tech or it was somewhere kind of that
general. It's him and a TCU transfer. My guess is they'll throw the TCU transfer out there early because their schedule is pretty front loaded, and then Bazelak probably takes over towards the end of the season.
Did I also hear that Ryan Helensky is probably not going to be the starter?
Yeah, that's a full-on competition because Bobo brought a quarterback with him from he's from South Carolina, I believe.
Yeah, who's at Colorado State grad transfer. Mm-hmm. Man, that's wild. Whew.
Helensky didn't have Kentucky. Kentucky was awful against him, but he had a pretty crummy year as a true freshman. So how he bounces back. And they're already switching coordinators and quarterback coaches on him. That's not really a recipe for success.
Mm-hmm. No, you're exactly right. Now that our bus has been to a variety of destinations, I'm not sure if what we've missed on in today's show. Because I feel like we have touched on quite a few different topics. But, I would be remiss if we miss one out of nowhere. Other than – I did like that Mark Stoops, when talking about Terry Wilson's first time kind of back at it, he was like, man, Terry, he just takes off and run, and I want to have a quick whistle, and he's even fast, too fast for that. It's good that he doesn't have hesitancy since he's returned.
How about Grant saying this is the fastest install he's had?
I'm glad you brought that up because – that's good. It's the value of upperclassmen that.
Well, just look at the roster. Quarterback, senior quarterback in there, his third year starting. You've got three redshirt senior, multi-year starters on the offensive line, a multi-year starter redshirt senior at tight end, a senior in Josh Ali, who's supposed to be your best receiver, who's played a lot of football.
A.J. Rowe, senior.
Yeah. A.J. Rowe is a redshirt senior starting running back. Mm-hmm. Your other receivers, Alan Daly, Cleavon Thomas, are upperclassmen.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, there's a lot of, experience on our roster. So, that, I mean, it's not a surprise, but it's definitely good to hear. Because I guarantee you there's a lot of experienced offenses that probably wouldn't move as fast.
Well, and when we're in this period where Grant's throwing everything up against the wall to see what sticks, he can throw literally everything against the wall now that everybody has seen this at some point. There's not any sort of new jargon that they've got to learn, like, this is the offense that they've had their entire careers at UK. So just to know that, like, you're going to have, we talked about the kind of benefits 12 personnel. I don't know if that's going to be that, but let's just say it is. They're going to know who their best kind of groupings are by game one. When you don't have that sort of tune-up game, it's going to be really important to know your best personnel. Whereas the team on the other side, that they're not going to have that luxury. They just aren't.
Speaking of 12 personnel, you got Rig to get going on that a little bit.
Yeah, he didn't really want to bite that. And that's the other downside to Zooming, because, like, let's be honest, like, we've gotten used to it because we've been talking at each other through this thing for an hour. But if you're on a regular, normal Zoom meeting type setting that has a lot of people in it, you really just want to be quick in and out. And so that's another kind of downside to the Zoom talks is they typically – a little bit harder to get some of those guys going.
Well, you don't get the social cues like you do in public or face-to-face interaction. Are there any players that you're surprised really haven't come up a lot so far? Man, I mean, we're week in.
In the yin to the yang, with all the praise for Vito Tisdale, it's been like the opposite for Devontae Robinson. I don't like the way that's kind of true. Now some of it's probably like, he's a year removed from injury. they're going to take it easy on him. But how much is it just like he's just not as good as those other guys, you know, like a Jordan Griffin kind of situation where like he's just going to get passed up, you know?
Yeah, maybe.
That surprised me.
Phil Hoskins, surprised we really haven't heard about him yet.
Nope, nothing at all, really.
And then Keaton Upshaw has been eerily quiet. Wonder if that's by design.
I bet that is because of the way that they kind of hyped him up last year. So, you know, maybe this is their way of subtly challenging him without going right out and saying it publicly. Because if you notice, the guys that they've challenged publicly are up like their seniors, or mm-hmm. except for Oliver. Oliver, he's going into his third year. So like these are guys who've been around the block quite a bit.
Yeah, it's not their first rodeo.
They know they can handle it, and they've mm-hmm. had some success. Whereas like Upshaw, I mean, hell, how many passes did he get thrown his way last year? You know, there hasn't been a lot of. So you don't want to wreck the dude's confidence. So maybe this is like the first step in kind of challenging himself.
And I'm not really surprised by this one, but Justin Rogers.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's some growing into, you know, the position and stuff like that he needs to go through. And you can't really do that in chills. You got to get out there and the full pads and play football.
Well, and I think with just the freshman D linemen in general.
Right. I think it's hard. It's hard.
Yeah, because, you know, you've talked a lot about how you think Josiah Hayes is probably the most game ready on day one. Well, Octavius Oxenden's also been there the longest too.
That's another thing too. In this, if once they get a scrimmage, whenever that's when you'll start to hear more of stuff like that.
And like, how much are they working them at different spots? Like,
yeah,
you know, I think that matters as well because they're different body types to a certain extent. So I think that's important. And one other thing with the big guys that we didn't mention that I think is. But not as shocking as some of the things we've heard, but like the entire offensive line dropped weight, you know, good weight during quarantine. And it kind of pissed me off, like it, to be frank. Like I'm over here just like dying to lose 5 pounds and Drake Jackson's dropping 30. It's like, dude, you guys are the fat guys. Like you were supposed to be the one.
Those big guys though, man, like as soon as they're done playing, some of those guys lose 40 pounds in like 2 months. It just flies off them.
I do like that Drake's like, man, I lost 30 pounds and they're still saying fat jokes, you know? Like, I bet that's just a fun group, you know?
Yeah.
But the one name that they mentioned was, I'm going to be completely honest, like, I never expected this guy to ever see the football field, Nick Lewis. He's just like the biggest human I've ever. Yeah. John Gruenschlager.
Even got the head coach mentioning.
Yeah. Like, John Gruenschlager was a guy that I thought was going to be the largest person I ever saw on a football field. Then Nick Lewis came to town and 6'9", 375, 380, 390, somewhere in there. Just a huge mm-hmm. human. And he's been the, like, fourth tackle. But, like, he wasn't ever going to – like, Kennard was going to go in wherever.
He's finally to the weight or like where you need him. Good.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they said – I mean, he probably dropped 40.
330 area.
And when you're getting shout-outs, like you said, from the head coach – it's like, okay, good. I love, like, it in doing this. The way football works, there's going to be guys that fall to the wayside. And I love when you have the guys that you doubt are going to make it. And you think, well, they'll probably just get caught up in the wash and end up transferring or something. I love hearing when guys have actually broke through that wall and made it to the other side.
And they could be another success story on the offensive line. Yeah. I mean, they've got a ton of them. It's looking like he might be trending that way.
Man, and this
is good.
This is might be another success story for a podcast. Sounds like it was a great one, if I do say so myself. Let's just go ahead and pat ourselves on the back. Let me get this knot back here and just kind of, man, training camp started and the whole KSR crew is thrown at our back in some form or fashion. It's just, this is the old man bone sitting down. It'll get
need to find the fountain of youth.
Jesus.
I have a feeling it'll be found once this season gets here.
Yeah, I need to get like something to stand up when I'm writing, you know? I feel like I sit down too much. Right now.
At the office, in my old office, they had some people had those desk risers.
Mm-hmm. The stand-up deals.
Right.
Yeah.
Need to get you one of those.
Yeah. We'll figure it out. We'll tinker with it. But we got more football that we'll be talking about. We got more coming to the website, KentuckySportsRadio.com. Just there's a lot of football happening, and frankly, it's exciting. And like, I can't wait to do it again next week.
All right. Sounds like a plan, my man. I think we're going to go with Tuesdays. So listeners, yep, expect that podcast to be in your feed on Wednesday from here moving forward.
Yes. Yes. Plan. That good. Thank you for reminding me, because it just makes sense. You know, we get the week that happened, and then we get a little bit of a teaser on Tuesdays. I'm sure you'll get it'll have enough time to hear what we've been, what's been happening at the scrimmages kind of talk. So, so yeah, it's a good time to be a Kentucky football fan. And you know what? We're going to have a lot more coming on the website. And there was something else I was going to pimp out, and I forget what it was. Oh, well, you know, you'll eventually see it. We'll put it out there. It'll be good.
High school football's on.
Oh yeah. There we go. It's on. And North Harden and Frederick Douglass. Be, you got to go to the practice facility if I'm more UK kids on that.
Yeah, no kidding.
I mean, my goodness. They're gonna have,
it's going to be double-digit FBS, high-level FBS prospects in that game.
And you know what? It's good because I think they're both 5A, and those teams, they don't
really play. That sounds right.
They don't really play. Like, their districts aren't very good.
Yeah, so, 5A's got them and Owensboro, Gavin Williamson's squad, all in the same division.
No, Somerset's 3A.
Yeah, they're way either 2 or 3. They're lower.
Yeah, but hey, that's going to be a fun first Friday night. And even if, you know, I'm sure there's going to be attendance restrictions, they'll have a stream of that somewhere.
Hope so.
Something to look forward to a couple of weeks from now. But we got to get out of here. It's time to see you later. But you know what? We'll be back before you know it with more from Kentucky's football preseason practice. Make sure you're following us along at Kentucky Sports Radio, reading the Monday Huddle with Adam Luckett, catching up on all of the practice sports Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, and much, much more. Thanks a lot for listening, and remember, go Cats, go Kroger.